adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. It's great to be back.
Is it really?
No.
Yeah. How was customs?
Could have made it without the show. I got held. Actually, it was the flight that was delayed in customs. I mean, customs are always a little delayed. I got back from Europe last night, kind of late. As a matter of fact, it was sort of my fault because, tell me if I'm just making this up, but I said, when do we get back? I went to a big group, went with Jimmy and some other friends to Europe, had a great time. They said, we're coming back Sunday. I've never come back to Los Angeles on a Sunday later than 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's always early because of the time difference, wherever it seems to be I'm coming from.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You ever come home Sunday, 12 o'clock, midnight?
No.
It's always noon
at least
or something.
It's 5 or 6.
Yeah, never later.
Yeah.
I don't know. So when I heard we're coming back on Sunday, I just went, all right, we'll be back. Turns out we're supposed to be back at like 9:30.
Oh.
In which case, well, you know, I was just going to make it here. You know, and I love the kids, but we got held up in Paris. 12 hours, like a long time to be on an airplane.
Without that recycled air.
Oh.
It drives you mad.
I got something going on, too.
Yeah.
I woke up this morning and blew like a manatee out of my nose.
Manatee?
You've seen those. You've seen them in Florida.
The water.
They're several hundred pounds.
Yeah,
they're
walrus.
Actually, what came out of my nose was bigger than me. It actually weighed more than
I did. That's the bacteria from the recycled air. It made that.
And your ill wife who called
me
today.
It's bad times. Oh, she was throwing up. She had a virus. She was heaving on the plane. People were yelling at her.
No.
Throwing up in the cab on the way to the... I have no idea.
Here's what that about. She's like, honey, I'm sick. Guy, rally. Come on. Chick, don't
Let's
rally.
Get it
Let's get
Let's
going.
Go. Let's get
break
a hand
it down.
Let's break it
Come
down
on.
Now. Hey, take a knee. Let's go now. Hey, gentlemen. Those helmets aren't chairs.
Suck it up.
Suck it up now. Rub some dirt on that, whatever it is that went south on you.
Yeah
it was bad. Talk about tip, like, to the taxi driver. When the old lady's heaving in the front seat.
Yeah.
In the front seat, right next to the guy, into a bag. That's bad times. By the way, a paper bag that the bottom came out of about an eighth of an inch before I made it to the trash can on the curbside of the...
What percentage did you tip him?
It was euros.
Yeah.
I think it was about 45, 50 euros to the airport. I gave him 80
so
bucks.
It was like $1,000.
Or 80 euros. Oh. Yeah, I think I may have bought him a villa or something. I'm not sure, but you got to actually. I got a lot. Daryl Hammond here, by the way. I don't even know. I got a little jet lag. I'm a little spun out. Daryl, my absolute favorite from Saturday Night Live, because he possesses a skill.
Wow.
Whereas other people, well, they got energy. Maybe they can act. Maybe, but it's not tangible. Daryl is actually has tangible skills in the voices that he does, and always. Always funny. Regis Philbin, always funny.
It's like being a field goal kicker, too. I mean, it's definitely a Friday and Saturday job now. It's like I usually get the job Friday night, so.
You just, you just go up there and hit a home run every week. And it's always funny to me.
Well, thank you.
Don't try to talk me out of it.
I'm sorry.
Jesse Jackson. Al Sharp. Do you do Al Sharpton?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Clinton's always great. Sean Connery's great.
Yeah.
The I'm trying to who's the news? Who's doing the
Dan Rather?
No. Who's
Koppel,
the news guy you do?
Koppel. Chris Matthews.
Chris Matthews.
You do Matthews?
Yeah. Oh, Chris Matthews, the best, really.
Oh, no.
It seems to be one you do more than a lot.
Well, you do it like if you do a character on there like over 3 times a year, it's a hit. Character. I mean, it really is. If you can repeat 3 or 4 times and then do that like 4 years in a row, it's definitely...
Is it getting... the legacy, the Coneheads and all that stuff. Is it getting harder to get repeat performance or repeat characters in the show?
Well, I keep adding people. I mean, you know, right. 1 year it's Regis, the next year it's Trump or Schwarzenegger. Oh, right. I mean, we keep adding things to do, and then there are the staples. Like, no one really ever gets tired of seeing Clinton out there. Right. So we trot him out there for no reason.
This should
reason.
Be interesting with his new book coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's, yeah.
Me, Bill, I'm the sex addict, Clinton.
Yeah.
He's not going to say that.
He claims it's in the book.
Really?
Really?
I've got to see this.
Really?
It's going to say something like, well, Lucifer possessed me for 3 days, and during that time, my clergy tells me that fill in the blank.
No, I know. It'll be sensational, but a cop out ultimately.
Absolutely. I can't wait to hear how he does it. It'll be genius, I'm sure.
I'm sure it'll get people to buy the book, and at the end, they'll feel slightly unsatisfied as they walk away from it. But much like Drew's book, cracked, everybody. It's out. Is there something less than paper that it can be out on? Pulp?
It'll be on paper.
It's
in
coming
fall.
Out on pulp.
In the fall.
Just raw.
It's going to be on
papyrus. You grab a handful of raw trees.
It's going to be on papyrus.
Papyrus and banana leaves. Coming up soon.
It's
everybody.
Etched in a block of dirt.
Written on a
clay.
Piece of charcoal stick. Yeah, everybody, on pulp. Coming to, what would it come to, Drew? A bookstore seems a little lofty for your book. I got it. One of those lunch trucks.
Yeah,
on pulp, coming to a lunch truck near you. Yeah. You hear the horn, you come running out, you buy the book. Sex addict, by the way, is starting to become a pretty viable diagnosis.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing people use it in divorces and stuff like that.
It's sort of becoming almost a platitude.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he's a sex addict.
He's a sex addict. What are you going to do? And isn't this going to... Each time this happens, doesn't it F things up for the real junkies of the world?
It diminishes, it diminishes.
When the guy pronounces he's a chocoholic, doesn't it sort of hurt the real guy's case,
know? Yeah, I think it is. I think that it's only an addiction if you can do it to the extent that cops will come. You see what I mean?
Chocolate,
they're going to leave you alone with the chocolate.
You got a good point.
The McDonald's, but the other ones you can get the authorities involved.
And if he is a sex addict, by the way, Lewinsky is like the equivalent to drinking Sterno.
Yeah, it's
you know what I mean? What am I going to... I need a fix. I got a big-ass chick. I don't care what she... I just get her in.
Well,
I need a hit.
I kissed her, by the way.
Lewinsky?
Yeah, I did.
When?
On our show. She came on the show.
Being Clinton. You were being,
that's right.
Being Clinton, and she... Now, you want to talk about tripping? You know, there's 16 million people watching. You got a fake nose on. You look like Clinton. They've made you have to do that. And you're sitting there, and a door opens... And Monica Lewinsky walks in.
You didn't know it was going to be her?
Oh, of course I did, but it's still, I don't give a damn how many times she walks in a room. You're still like, ooh,
yeah,
Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I'm Bill Clinton.
And she's then, great, too, because she wants to talk about her purses.
And then,
I don't want to talk about
it. And then it's like that famous face
right.
coming towards you. You know, in waves, like...
Do you ever, this sounds like a retarded Barbara Walters type question, but it could actually work, and especially if you get high or drunk a little bit. Mm-hmm. You ever spot yourself in the mirror after you're done up as a character and sort of surprise yourself?
It hasn't really happened that much. A couple of times it has.
I would get high on like a pot brownie.
I would pass out, maybe mushrooms.
I would wake up the following morning as a very messed up Clint with maybe a nose hanging half off, stumble into the bathroom because I urinate in the sink, and take a look at myself and freak out. I mean, just for a heartbeat.
The weird thing that unsettles me is that sometimes I'll talk to, like, after I do the piece, I'll talk to someone like that.
Mm-mm.
You know, I'll have to fight, whoa, what am I doing? But I mean, that's weird for me.
Let me say to the people of America, the nations of the world,
back.
That I hate your ass.
Wherever I went.
I've been trying, and no one's ever studied this, Drew. You study a lot of stuff no one gives a rat's ass about, but how about studying something that's interesting, which is the ability to mimic that way. There's a couple guys.
Is there a pathology to that?
Not that I'm aware of. It's a skill.
Nothing comes from good.
Yeah, nothing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, nothing of substance comes.
You're happy. Yeah, you barely get one voice. Look at Drew.
Yeah,
Drew's happy. Half a personality.
But I always wondered: is there something wrong? Is it sort of a genetic misprint?
Why you have that ability?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Well, there's something called mirror neurons in your brain that will literally, when I see you move your hand, my brain will fire off in the exact distribution of hand movement, exactly what you're doing, without moving my hand.
And what an odd thing to give a person.
And you, and some people may have more mirroring ability. And we, listen, we are mimetic species, right?
Yes, so we derive from each other.
That's right. And so whatever, for whatever reason, that mirroring becomes more intense. More you developed advanced. It or whatever, yeah.
But, you know, and I work with a guy or two that does this. They do it instinctively. Somebody mm-hmm. comes in the yeah. room, makes some proclamation and leaves. They do the same proclamation right. a beat later, yeah. and they're better at it than everybody. Right. And as far as the ability to do it, it seems really God-given to me to be able to mimic. That way you have to hone it, you have to work on it, but a guy like me couldn't do it in 1,000 years.
By the way, all this talk about mimicry and myself and our audience, it's like talking about a steak and then not serving it.
Mm.
I want to hear some. I want to hear some.
Hold on.
Let me say, the people of America and the nations of the world that I hate your ass.
Stop what?
We got to stop the show because
what is that?
That's you. That's Drew doing his first piece of decent radio in over 6 years,
that's
by
right.
the way.
That's right.
Actually realizing that Daryl should do a voice or two.
That's right. Because I'm salivating waiting for the damn thing.
Uh-huh. No, you're right. I don't. Let's see. Give us a little Sean Connery.
Well, why don't we talk about some other things?
All right. Here's the deal. Daryl and I spent a few days.
No. Then I'll like Al Sharpton or something.
Oh, okay.
You want to talk about him?
We'll talk about politics.
I don't know.
We'll talk about Sharpton. I'd love to hear. I'd love to
Chris
hear
Chris Matthews
a little
on Ronald Reagan and Ronald Reagan's demise. Chris Matthews who idolized.
Let me talk about.
That guy died 10 minutes ago. Drew.
Let me talk about Sharpton and. See if that's satisfying.
Well, Sharpton, it was on Saturday Night Live, wasn't it? Didn't he host it a few weeks ago?
I've always said that he's the one guy that Bush would never really want to debate, or anyone really, because I don't know that you can really prepare for what comes out of his mouth. I mean, like, it was true, I was watching TV, and I was flipping, and I saw Gephardt talking about Homeland Security. I changed the channel. I saw Lieberman talking about tax cuts. I turned on Hannity and Combs, and I heard Sharpton say, "I did not call Giuliani a bozo." I said, "Bozo could have done just as good a job as Giuliani." Clearly, that's not calling Giuliani a bozo. That's not saying Giuliani is bozo. There's a world of difference between calling Giuliani a bozo and saying the bozo have talent. Do you deny bozo have talent? Giuliani have talent, but just about as much talent as bozo. They might be the same.
I do think the hot comb is fried as brain.
Now, if you flatten that sound out and you move it closer to the front of your mouth, you could have Jesse Jackson like, "I went to the Middle East, brought home Swainer, Gutman, Chainer. I did not leave a cake, old Bible, all gone with a sod. We should hit together the real rainbow coalition, red, yellow, black, white, Ronnie, Bobby, Rick, and Mike."
Jackson really may have a legitimate speech impediment. I mean, he's hard to understand.
Well, you said
I'm saying he has a learning disability. I'm not calling him dumb. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he may have an impediment. Right?
Well, he does a speed merge, like he'll da 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 like that. He'll go, "I saw it was at that apparatus emulsion."
Right. Yeah, he's one of these guys you can't understand because of his cadence.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know, he's the he'd be
that's
like one of
just
these.
That's not either. I mean, he says some strange things.
He's okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, let's.
I'll give you that. Do you have anything strange he may say?
Well, he'll say, "I didn't run negative ads like George Bush, negative campaigns, and rat a tat tat." That's funny. And rat a tat tat. Negative campaign and rat-a-tat-tat. That's a quote, by the way.
Really?
That's,
yeah,
absolutely.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Regis too. By the way, don't have to stuff him in, but if you feel you know the need, you can do it.
The thing about Regis is that he thinks something, then he rethinks it, and the second time he thinks it, it makes him mad. Do you understand?
Yes.
This is how his brain works. So go, "Joy and I were down in a cave in Tijuana that was 1,000 years old. It was 1,000 years old." The second time it upsets him.
Yeah. I love, by the way, Regis and Kelly, hilarious SNL bit, by the way. Drew, you don't stay up and watch the SNL like I do. It's she has no idea what he's talking about because he's 1,000 years older than Kelly, and it's just she drives him. It's really always. By the way, I sound like my mom when she's describing a funny episode of Murphy Brown. Right. I always just say it's a disaster, but it's probably the and then you got Gilman. I got the sort of ambiguously gay Gilman, and it's got to be one of your favorites.
It's definitely we do it like it's. Did you just burp?
I just coughed.
I did it.
It's a mate. It's another manatee. One works way out.
May pull one out. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Sorry. And it seems like there's a lot of room for improvisation within that bit.
Well, there is, and it doesn't really happen until we go on the air. I mean, we sort of set a framework with a series of cues, so we'll never go completely off course. But I think what happens to me is that Amy Poehler will do something that's amazingly funny.
I mean,
she'll do things. The whole idea is that she's interrupting Regis's life, and sometimes she'll get a little bit physical about it, and it's funny.
She sort of clings to his arm and does this thing,
slaps
but
him
it's very discriminating against Regis's age in a very condescending way.
Are you tired, Drew?
Yes.
Drew,
you're
what's
tired.
The matter with
yes.
you?
I hear Adam's voice, I start yawning. It's just every night.
Yeah.
It's a conditioned response I have.
You know how the audience feels. What'd you do? Oh, you're tired.
Why are you tired?
Yeah, you got up at 5 and went jogging.
Kids.
So what?
You
do that every morning.
Kids. You got kids, that makes you tired automatically,
right.
Right?
Thank you.
All right. What's up? You cool?
Yeah.
I want to
hear the Daryl Hammond Drew story in Toronto later.
All right. Yeah. Oh, when the power
when
went out?
When we were filming, yeah.
All right. Some folk singer ought to write a song about the night the lights went out in Quebec.
Toronto.
Jane?
Yes. Yeah,
it's too bumpy, though.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the night that the lights went out in Toronto.
Ontario.
Ontario. Ontario's better. Let's just call
Vancouver.
It Ontario.
Ontario.
Jane?
Yeah?
Uh-oh.
You're
barely trying to hear you.
I can hear. Can you hear me?
All right.
Boy,
not
really.
So good.
Let's try 6.
Try 6.
We got a problem, I think.
Felicia?
Yes?
Uh-oh.
We got a problem. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, hold on one second.
I got to do 40 minutes on Europe, then. Fine. Good. God bless you. Everyone get off the phone.
I want to hear from some of the people.
You're going to hear from one from the person.
Okay.
Forget about
so
the
how
people.
Was, so how was Italy?
Focus on the person.
Adam was in Italy.
I was in Italy. Italy was fine. Yeah. But I gotta say, it was really, Italy's like, it's sort of like
Mexico light.
Like Mexico studied for the SATs.
Yeah.
You know, it's like someone woke Mexico up, sewed them up a little, and said, you got to go study for this. We got to get you into this sort of state school. It's like Mexico went to Cal State Northridge. It's really what Italy.
Can you give specific examples of that?
Is
like,
to me.
People don't like to work.
Here's my example. And I didn't tour the country.
I knew he'd pick up on that.
I went to a few places. Lots of terracotta tile. Everything's made out of tile. And by the way, after spending a week in a villa in Italy by the beach, Positano, it's on the Amalfi Coast, everything's great. I hit the carpet. I was rolling around like Snoopy in it. Like I was dying for some carpet. You don't know. Oh my God! All right. You don't know how much you miss carpet until you don't feel it. By the way, no mats. No. You don't step. You step out of the shower. You step on the tile.
I have that problem with due process. You know,
oh yeah,
you
that's
never
right.
Jamaica for you.
You never appreciate due process until you're done.
Until you work a Disney
until
cruise.
You're in an underground cell.
Was that a Disney cruise?
That.
Yeah, you went to shore at a Disney cruise.
Yeah.
We never did forget that store, and evidently you didn't either.
Did I tell that on the air?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I asked you to tell it again, but it seemed painful.
Yeah, you weren't willing to do it a second time.
I don't care now. I mean, you guys. I mean, I guess I could.
Here's the thing, and. Drew did decent radio about 10 minutes ago. And by the way, I'm glad you got out of your system.
It's done.
You're good for another 6-8 years.
Yeah, don't worry.
You shouldn't talk about stories and then
not
say you're not going to talk about them again. And Daryl told this story. It had to be at least 2-3 years ago on this show, maybe more. So phones are working. We got about 3 minutes. Well, let's just tell the story and we'll get through the break. Daryl Hammond is here. Was doing a cruise ship, right? How long ago?
13, 14 years.
Performing on
the
stand-up.
Right.
and
went to a bar. I had four, I forget what they called them, but each drink had four liberal shots of golden rum. So I'd done 16 shots.
In Jamaica?
Yes. And actually it was, well, let's just call it Jamaica. It was close, very right. close. But I feel that I can drink to such a point that I, like, believe I go to another reality. I mean, there have been times that I've been drinking gin, for real. I mean, more than once, where I'd be sitting in the bar convinced that I would play for the Yankees now. Convinced.
That you would or that you
I was
were?
That I was going to.
Oh, really?
That I was like, I can make this happen. I can make this comeback.
Right.
And you know, so I was in that level of drunk.
Right.
And then there was some rustling of leaves. Next thing you know, I was in a bathroom, and they give out samples of to ship workers, like, hey, want to try my stuff?
Coke?
You know what? It was powder. I mean, there wasn't enough in there to measure, certainly, and barely enough to blow. I mean,
right.
like to like. You know, across a tabletop.
Right. Yeah, maybe you get a freeze, though. You get a nice freeze.
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, it was certainly exercised poor judgment. And
good to pretend like you don't know what I was doing when I was doing the freeze thing. Smart.
I don't know what that is.
All right. Keep going.
Anyway, so it ended up that I was with some guy, and then he was being watched, and then I got clipped, and went to this place.
You're basically on leave. The cruise ship is in port.
Yeah.
You're on Jamaica for just for clarity. You're drinking at a bar. When is the ship due to pull out of port?
In a couple of hours.
Jail now, or it's, prison.
It was a jail. I don't know what the difference between jail and prison is, actually. But I was in a jail, and I had something in my pocket that was a controlled substance.
Uh-huh.
And in that part of the world, they really, really hate that.
Really?
Yeah.
They hate cocaine?
They hate people that break that law.
Yeah.
They really, really, really respond to that emotionally.
It's and by the way, it's a strange culture to really come down on drugs. You know what I mean? The Jamaican culture.
Well, it was explained to me when I was in my cell that there were two, there was a separation there, and there were some people that didn't care about it one way or another. But, I mean, the truth is that there are a lot of really good people there, and they're very religious, and they play by the rules, and they hate drugs. They
really?
Hate people that do them. And they have laws, and when they can, they enforce them.
And so,
how long were you in jail for?
Let's see, Friday, Saturday, just like 3.5, almost 4 days.
And you didn't know how long you were going to be there?
No, I really didn't. I didn't know when the arraignment was going to be. It wasn't really an arraignment. It was a trial.
And the ship just pulled up and left.
Yeah, the trip said the ship left.
And were you able to contact them?
No. No, somebody came down there from the ship. Someone whispered in their ear. I saw them nod a couple of times, and then let's go throw their arms up and walk away. And
do they comb?
Send out a search party.
Yeah, how do they know? How do they even know you're missing?
I don't understand that. I worked on ships for like 5 years, and I would occasionally hear so and so didn't come back. You know,
right. And had you performed already?
I think you know what I think. No, I had. Yes, I'd already performed, but I was there with some people from the ship.
I see.
Saw me, detained.
Right. And the thing about the ship is, as I know, but you can correct me. I got buddies who do this once in a while. They can go out on like a 9-day cruise. You perform twice, and you're done.
Yeah.
Oftentimes.
The problem.
That's what you
the
want.
The problem with it is that it was a time in my life, and even I just don't do it as much as I used to. But I don't blame other people as much for a lot of the stuff I got into. I don't.
Well, you had some responsibility in this one.
I had a lot of responsibility in this one.
Right,
lots of stuff. It was my hands, my movement, my thought process.
But still bitter.
Back then, the way my head was working was like this was done to me. Well, I'm so sad to say that it really wasn't.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're. Let's say there's something in your brain you're not clear about. Okay, you know, you're just kind of fuzzy about that. I don't know how I feel. Get in an underground cell in leg irons. You get clear. You get real clear on who you are and how this happened. You get clinical. Like, wait a minute, I did this. I've had a negative attitude. I've been, you know, blah 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 blah, and I want another chance. And you want to talk drama. I don't exactly. I've always wondered what is shock. Like, what is shock? Like, when you're sitting in a prisoner's docket and they say, "Will the defendant please rise?" And you go numb. You go blank. You know, is that shock? I mean, I
that's
don't know.
That's dissociation.
Whatever.
Dissociation.
We got to take a break, by the way. I know Daryl, and well, obviously made it out in one piece. He called his father. And I remember something about his dad, and I remember something about revenge, but he let it go.
Well,
hold on. We got to take a break.
No revenge.
The dark, introspective, and deeply troubled, but amazingly talented Daryl Hammond. And resilient.
Thank you.
Daryl Hammond is here tonight. We got some dates for his comedy tour, by the way. We'll give you all that after this. Hey, buddy. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Got a little jet lag, but feeling good. In from Europe, Daryl Hammond is our guest tonight. Daryl, always one of our favorites, and clearly my favorite on Saturday Night Live, because he possesses talent, huge amounts of talent, although I don't give him a ton of credit for it.
You know what? To
it's
me,
a little God-given.
To me, I feel God-given. I call myself a sword swallower. To me, sometimes I feel like I'm not legitimate at all, you know, because it's this one thing. It's like being a field goal kicker on a football team. You know, you don't feel like you're a football player. You kick field goals. And
But you're a decathlete, and that you may be an athlete, but you do so many different characters that you have.
Like 100, and I think I've done 111.
Wow. Really? All right.
That's a lot.
Feel good about yourself, would you, buddy?
Okay.
Let's go. Let's get a hand. Let's put our hands together.
All right,
together.
You got
Let's
it.
Let's go now. Get a hand in. Now, break
you.
It down, Daryl. Let's go. Hey, listen, gentlemen. And I say gentlemen, I use that term loosely. I love the funny, the gym coach that swears he's funny. Because he's got a bunch of 8th graders that are just scared assless of him. And by the way, I just remember going to junior high. If there was a teacher that told a joke that W.C. Fields stole from a mummy several thousand years before, I thought it was hysterical. Mm-hmm. Just the notion that these people, even if they had a personality.
Yeah.
If you just discovered that your teacher had just even spot him in the supermarket,
yeah,
it was bizarre.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Jackson, or Mr. Delbert over there, he got a Hungry Man dinner. He eats a dinner. Yeah, so it was like everything's a novelty.
Uh-huh.
But any kind of joke, anything at all, crazy. I don't know what that is.
Our coaches used to say to us, like, if we didn't hit the guy hard enough, the coach would say, and this is accusatory, "I don't think you want it."
You got to prove you want it.
"I don't think you want it, boy."
I like the always like the trick question, the ones you knew you're screwed either way. You just get done doing jingle jangles or wind sprints or something, and it's like, "Who here's tired?"
Yeah.
Not me, coach. "All right, then we're going to do 10 more."
Yeah.
It's like, "I'm kind of tired, coach." "All right, then. You're not in good enough shape. We're going to do 15 more." It's like, you always need a moment to consult. Like, "Who here's tired?" Let's have a team meeting. Hold on a second,
coach. Did you benefit
coach.
In any way for the rest? Did you find skills in that experience that you could use in the rest of your life?
I did.
What? Like playing Little League sports, Pop Warner football,
no,
that kind
I'm
of
talking
stuff?
About, I'm talking
or
about,
getting yelled at.
I'm talking about high school football wind sprints far beyond where you thought you could go.
Once in a while, I'll be running out to the car and just throwing a shoulder roll, and then I'll run in karaoke style. That's by the way, that used to be something you did with your feet back. And then I'll turn or switch around and go backwards.
Yeah, but what I get out of that, and this is really sad, but I get, A, I can do a lot more than I think I can do.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact. And, B, I want to make it seem like I'm like some, artiste, the great Daryl, you know, and that I wear a cape for what I do. But really, it's a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no substitute.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and here's the thing. Then we're going to the phones. We got things to talk about.
Can I say one thing? The thing about Saturday Night Live is that we're fast. We get our jobs on Wednesday if we're lucky. Many of us get our jobs on Thursday or Friday.
Your assignments.
The whole thing is speed.
Right.
So you have a guy in Vegas that works on an impression for 5 years. We work on our impressions for 2 days.
Right.
And then we get critiqued as if we were, you know, we'd been working on it for a year. And the material's never the same.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
No, we have stand-ups come on this show all the time and not be funny because they're funny when you saw their act.
It's a different medium.
Honing it for 10 years. I've said this many times about Saturday Night Live. People give it too much crap. It's really hard to do. And there's no taller order than putting up fresh sketch material week in and week out. It's really hard. Most of these sketch shows, if you do see any around town, it's the same material that's been honed, banged out, worked on.
To me,
on.
It seems really hard. It doesn't seem like an easy job to me.
Here's the thing, though, in my humble opinion. And then we're going to these phones, Drew. I think people, and this is just John Q. Public, guy sitting in middle America with his arms folded, armchair quarterbacking television, thinks Saturday Night Live is easier than it is, thinks something like Whose Line Is It Anyway is harder than it actually is. And for that, many times people have proposed doing sketch comedy shows to me and other guys I work with and stuff. And I always say, forget it, because it's a 10 on the difficulty scale, mm-hmm. and people perceive it as a 6.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. You want to do something that is a 6 and people perceive as a 10. People watch Whose Line Is It Anyway or an improv show, and they go, oh, I could never do that. They watch SNL, and they go, it was better when John Belushi. It wasn't. Go back and watch the old SNL stuff. Their batting average was abysmal. It really was. Like a memorable sketch every 300 sketches, and most of them are 8 minutes long with Buck Henry just trying to F 9-year-olds. That was actually, it was all Buck Henry trying to F 9-year-olds. That's all it was. That's all. The show should have been called Buck Henry Tries to F 9-year-olds.
I missed it.
It's an old sketch.
Okay.
Uncle, the molesting uncle.
I just
Buck Henry.
Remember that?
You don't remember that one? What do we got to... We got to tell Daryl about the Saturday Night Live. History of Saturday Night Live.
He's not old enough to remember.
I'm sure I was hammered out of my mind.
Oh yeah, Uncle.
When I quit baseball, I went on the spree of all sprees. No question about it.
All right,
I wanted to be a ball player.
You're done now. I mean, you're done with the
sprees.
I don't
drink. No, I don't drink.
Well,
don't.
Good.
What position you play baseball?
All right,
I
now
play
it's
true.
Outfield. Now this is it.
All right, here we go.
We're never going to take a call.
All right, here we go.
Sorry.
Listen. We'll talk. We'll talk during the break. Don't know the Buck Henry bit where he's trying to, he's a pedophile. True, can you imagine that bit being on today?
Did it get laughs?
Yeah.
He had like Gilda Radner and...
The tall, thin
like
one.
Lorraine
Newman.
Lorraine Newman, and he'd be... And they were dressed up, they were like 8 and 9-year-old girls. And he'd be like, jump up and down on the sofa and let me take pictures. Yeah. And he'd get down low to get like crotch shots and stuff.
People laughed at this?
People thought it was hysterical.
Yeah. That is heavy.
All right.
Times.
Hey, I can't believe. I guess, by the way, it's probably one of the things that doesn't come up in the halls that much. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. We got to look that one up. Uncle Jane.
Uncle.
We'll get to it. Jane?
Hi.
You're 20.
Yeah.
What's up?
I was dating a guy for, like, 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was really abusive, and a few days ago, he used to hit me a lot, and I told him, you know, don't hit me, and finally, he got really, really annoying, I guess, and I told him, that's it, I'm leaving you. You know, I was trying to leave, and he hurt me, and
what
I called
the police. What do you do? He hit you again?
Yeah, he grabs me, and he throws me around and shakes me, and like...
All right. Now, hold on. I feel profanity coming, so please think carefully.
Oh, no, yes, okay.
All right.
Choose your words cautiously.
That's right.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead. What's your question?
I'm having a hard time, like, getting over him or trying to, like, keep away from him or not, like, think about him.
All right, one of the theories about why this happens is that when a child is physically or sexually abused, the terror of the experience drives them to need the person even more. They're driven towards a person of attachment. And if the person that terrorizes you is a parent, at the once you're terrorized by them and driven more intensely towards them at the same time.
Mm.
And that becomes a source of extreme arousal in adolescence. And so when you go out and look for relationships, the kind of guy you're going to be attracted to is the same kind of guy that produces those same feelings. and it's why you have trouble disengaging from those relationships. Your attachment needs, your need for the connection is even higher because of the trauma he evokes in you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the reality is you have to break out of this. It's just you'll die.
Let me ask you a question. What is it? If a parent loses their temper and yells at the child, I'm sick of this. I've been telling, you know what I mean? I'm sick of you. I'm really mad at you, and yells.
Yes.
That, to me, doesn't, that's someone losing their temper.
Correct.
That and the child gets, oh, wow, I'm scared.
Right.
But
it doesn't shatter their regulatory system.
My mommy's yelling at
right.
me.
Right. They have to believe, they have to feel powerless and believe that the possibility of going on being may be in question.
Well, Jane,
their life in danger.
Yeah, that's when they feel trauma.
Did somebody raise their hand to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, I was punished, like, physically.
All right.
Yeah, that's
all
not
right.
punishment, that's abuse.
Well, it's probably.
What about getting hit with a hammer?
That's abuse.
Hey, Jane.
Was it one of those those clown hammers?
No,
it wasn't. That's a mallet. Right?
Mallet, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Hey, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, look, you know what you got to do, and you know why you're attracted to this guy. And by the way, these kinds of attractions are stronger than if you just met a nice-looking guy
right.
who you shared common interests with.
That's right. That's the irony of all this.
Yes.
You're more attached to the horrible, abusive guy that you need to get away from. Your life depends upon it.
So how about just breaking up with him? Oh, how about a little therapy, too, you know?
Yeah, why are you attracted?
I mean, I've warned him before, like, not to do that, and he keeps doing it. And
Jane,
I was hoping,
he will not
like,
change. He will not change.
Okay.
No way is he going to change.
Now, wait a minute. If you are...
And by the way, let me just say this, too. And we'll get to Daryl's question, which is...
Someday.
Someday. Not tonight's show. We'll get to baseball. We'll get to the questions. No. When a guy decides that it's a good idea to hit a woman, that's something that's not in our vocabulary.
Right.
We couldn't physically do it.
Right.
I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And when a guy decides it's okay to do it, there's no coming back from that.
That's
or if
right.
there is, it's a long road.
No, no.
It's not like, okay, I'm going to slow it down. I'll stop it this week.
No.
Yeah, you might put together a month.
Yeah.
Maybe a month and a half.
If
it's in your vocabulary.
It's in your vocabulary.
It's in your vocabulary. And it's not a whole lot different than the guy likes looking at the kids on the internet kind
right.
of thing. It's like, that's what he does. That's what he's into. We're not capable of it. He's capable of it, and there's going to be more to follow.
And so you want to ask why traumatic relationships result as a source, become a source of attraction.
A, yes, that's
a. Why do you re-traumatize yourself?
A, and then B, can a guy like that change if he wants?
Yeah, he can. He has to want to a lot. It's like, you know, like any other compulsive behavior. He has
and
to
he,
want to.
He might need to sober up.
He might be related to a substance problem.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's not going to do it because she wants him to.
Right.
No way. She's the one that needs to change and get out of this pattern of re-victimization.
Right.
And by the way, just for clarity, she says she asked him to stop hitting her. It doesn't count if he's hitting you while you're asking him to stop.
So
you
got
to do it another day.
So as an adult, why do you re-traumatize yourself?
Well, that one little theory I just brought up is that your attachment needs, you're driven more tightly to the person that's terrorizing you if it's a person that you have an attachment to.
Why are you?
Because
your life is depending on it.
Yeah, we as humans, when we are terrorized, we go to other humans. And particularly we run to our primary caretakers. If our primary caretakers are the one doing the abuse, we're at once having a very intense need for them and terror caused by them.
Now let me
and exactly why the wiring develops. No one quite knows.
Let me say this too. As long as you know, look, let's just get heavy and do a heavy show tonight. Who gives a rat's ass? Screw entertain. And what Daryl will do Regis in the 11 o'clock hour.
I want to hear Sean Connery
and Sean Connery. But how about this? How about the unknown? Like better to believe in a vengeful God than believe in no God. Do you know what I'm saying? Now I'm getting real heavy and weird, and maybe it's just a jet lag talking. But what I mean is even though it's something painful, it's something they know. And if you think about it in the deity range, better to have a God that tosses somebody in the volcano every once in a while or causes somebody to get hit by a tornado.
As long as there's a reason that he's doing it, because this way I can avoid it. I have some control over myself. God will do this if I do this. Okay, all right, it's better that way.
Yeah, the worst place to be is it's just a dark, empty universe. I could have a chunk of ice land on me tomorrow and crush me.
Yeah.
And I would go nowhere but the ground. You know what I'm saying?
Again,
that's my thought.
And then what you're evoking, though, is feelings of emptiness and aloneness,
right.
which is what the human can't tolerate.
All right, let's get some coffee and take a leak.
Yeah, let's do that.
Daryl Hammond here tonight. He's doing himself a comedy tour.
What? I didn't know you. I thought we were going to take a break.
No, we're going. We're going. I was like, Gerald Hammond here, everybody. He's got himself a comedy tour. Watch him do his impersonation of Lurch. Yeah, it's awesome. No, there'll be more. Hey, you think that was funny?
Tempe.
Hour 15 minutes of that.
Tempe. I'm at Tempe this weekend.
All right. Well, is this Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
All right. Monday, going to be in a drunk tank in Tucson, though. So see him over the weekend. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Let's see. Daryl Hammond in here, by the way, tonight. And who the hell knows who's coming up?
Jenny McCarthy on Wednesday, Alanis Morissette on Thursday.
I was looking down at the bottom of the page. Oh, that's right. Jenny McCarthy was supposed to come in here like 2 weeks ago, right? So when I saw Jenny McCarthy with 10 names under her, I thought it was an old list. Yeah. All right, Jenny McCarthy in here on Wednesday, Alanis Morissette on Thursday. Yeah. Good times. Daryl Hammond in here tonight. The backbone of Saturday Night Live, the glue that holds the mortar between the comedic bricks, which sometimes not every sketch is a winner. I'm going to tell you, it's an impossible task. Don't even try. But then he comes on as a Regis or Jesse Jackson, and all is right in the world. And and by the way. You know, I don't know what they would do without you, and if they did do without you, they'd have to replace you with a you type. I mean, there always has to be some
right.
Phil Hartman.
Right.
Always has to be somebody who can do that right. and do it well.
I want to hear Chris Matthews.
Oh, Chris Matthews. Let's see. I have to warm my voice up. Andy,
you're dull. You look like a defective Pez dispenser. Shut it.
Chris Matthews is.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
because it's not.
True. Would you watch the show? I'm telling
there's
you,
not much distinctive about
the best part of it.
Well, it's high pitch. It's a rougher version of Don Knotts.
But it's also the way that he does it, that he controls it, that he throws it from one guest to the next guest, and
I don't think you can be. I don't think you can be a total bum and do. I mean, you just can't. I always felt that SNL sort of, you know, redefined what impressions were. You know, I mean, you've got to be able to think on your feet out there in character.
Yeah, but to me, impossible.
Yeah, well,
impossible and true.
Think on your feet.
No, that part I could do, but the impression part don't have, just don't you know what it's like? It's like vertical leap. You know what I mean?
Don't have it.
Okay. I'm 6'2". I can you know, at my best I could dunk a tennis ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's the best I could do. Allen Iverson, 6', and hits his nuts on the rim. What are you gonna do? What, tell me to work on it?
No.
If I work my ass off, what I get? Another quarter inch?
Yep.
That's it. That's life, by the way, everybody. That's how it works. That's why I say don't try. Never try.
Just accept things as they are.
In advance.
In advance. That's
accept
right.
Accept your genetic endowments.
That's right. That's right. Colleen?
Yeah?
You're 19?
Yeah.
What's up?
It just seems like, my period, it seems more and more painful.
Every time you get a period, it gets more and more painful.
Yeah.
Are your periods irregular?
Yeah.
Are they heavy?
Not that heavy.
Are you on any medication?
I was on, antispasm.
Hold on, Drew. Right. I thought we were going to do...
Yeah, we don't have time to do it, though.
What's our bit?
Chief Thunderbolt.
Chief Thunder... Proud Bear?
Proud Bear.
Thunder Bear?
We'll do it with the
American Indian gynecologist.
Yeah, we'll do it when we get back.
Drew working as a translator.
We will do that with Colleen when we return.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. I want to set the soil. Make sure.
Yeah.
Right, so what happens? What's the problem?
The
chief says, "Relax. He'll be getting
it."
Relax.
All right.
Just calm down. Mr. Funny guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Daryl Hammond. Yeah.
Tempe, Arizona. Tempe, Arizona, 6'10 to
6'3.
I don't know.
It's this weekend.
This weekend.
Tempe, Arizona, improv.
And then 6/17, the Trump event in New York.
Oh, what the? Yeah,
6/18.
Trump asked me to do it.
He's very impressed by that. He can't do anything like that.
Is that like Chinese you're doing?
Konnichiwa. He's saying a prayer for you. Well, you know, that they say the American Indians walked over the land bridge towards Asia. And so there was some linguistic connections there. July 17th, 16th and 17th, Houston Laugh Stop. July 22nd, July 24th, Vernon Hills Zanies.
Yeah, forget about that. Let's talk about
July
this 29th,
31st.
Yeah.
Tempe this weekend.
That's this weekend, everybody.
Tempe.
All right. Daryl Hammond is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll get back with Colleen and her vagina after this. Hey, everybody. It's the Love Line. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Daryl Hammond in studio tonight. Jenny McCarthy and Alanis Morissette coming in a little bit later on this week. Daryl is going to be in Tempe, Arizona.
This weekend.
Doing stand-up. That would be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Yes, Drew.
We lost Colleen. Again, increasingly painful periods is an endometriosis or cysts or just dysmenorrhea. She needs to get that evaluated. She's on the screen. It said she was a virgin, so we can take STD and ectopic pregnancies off the list.
I miss the period talk. I really do.
Well, as it happens,
it's been a week.
We have Emily here, 22, who needs to talk to a gynecologist spiritual advisor on line 4.
Emily, line 4.
Yeah.
All right. What was the name of my chief I can summon?
Thunderbear?
Chief Thunderbear.
Was that right?
American Indian gynecologist.
He was a quacutal.
Part quacutal. It turns out he's got a little Chinese in him as well.
Japanese.
I thought it was I thought it was Chinese that Daryl pointed
I thought
out.
It was Chinese.
All right. Please do not critique my gibberish. But jump in on the phone call. I'll get
Sean Connery may have to ring in on a few of these issues.
All right. Why doesn't Chief Thunderbear, American Indian gynecologist, and Sean Connery all jump in on this call?
Family.
Drew, you're going to have to work as a translator.
I don't need to translate the Scottish. I can translate the Algonquin.
Let me go get him.
Okay.
Emily? Yeah, hey.
Hi.
Emily?
Yes?
Oh, this phone sucks. Excuse me, Chief. Emily, I'll be translating for Chief Thunderbear.
Okay,
Emily, he would like to speak with you. What's the question?
Well, my question is for Dr. Drew, actually.
Who am I? Chop liver? Chop liver, I tell you. Chop liver!
I'm 22 years old. And I've been having sex for about 2 years, and every time I have had sex, it has hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt?
In my vagina.
Of course, in your vagina. But what part of your in your pelvis? Is it all right? He just has to say a few words of prayer to the this is the god of I guess fertility he's speaking to. I don't really understand some of these religious allusions. And it's all good now. Emily, it's during intercourse, is that right?
Yes, during and afterwards.
Is it right at the point of penetration?
No, it's like from the beginning, clear to the end, and all the way around.
Chris, more coffee. Chris, hustle, get it. He's asking you 3 days in a row for coffee. For God's sakes, what's going on here? Coffee, come on. With a little whitener. Milk, not whitener.
It's a serious problem here, doctor.
Yeah, come on, Drew.
Okay.
Let's go.
Emily, here's the deal. Is this just with this guy?
No, I've had sex with two guys, and it has been the same.
Yeah, what happened to Sean Connery, by the way? That's my question.
I'll talk about Connery in a minute. Let's solve this, and then I'll do a little...
Do you have problems lubricating?
I'll tell you how I learned him.
There were trouble?
I feel like I lubricate very well.
Have you had a pelvic exam? Interestingly, Emily's from Alaska. I'm sure she understood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and did they never find anything when you have pelvic exams?
No, I've been to a couple of different gynecologists, and they say that everything looks normal. Mm-hmm.
And are you anxious during these acts? Or you feel uptight?
She waited until 22 before she lost her virginity, which could mean something.
No, I don't think she said that.
Oh, I thought she said she had sex the first time at 22.
No, I am 22.
No, she's had it before. And each time, it's always been painful.
Oh, I don't know where I got the 2 years ago.
The translation.
Take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of difficult. Usually, it's called dyspareunia, pain with intercourse. Mm-hmm. And certainly, if you had a trauma history, a sexual abuse, that sort of thing, that's a common cause of it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Women that are nervous or anxious may have something called vaginismus, where the pelvic floor spasms and the point of penetration can be painful.
Uh-huh. And I've had that, and then I explain that I'm done. And they're relieved. It's like, I don't know if I'm ready. Oh, listen, I'm done.
And they take it out? He takes it out at that point?
I'm done. I'm actually watching TV. They have it's like waking up from surgery. Doc, is this going to hurt?
I'm your assistant.
That's it.
I'm going to get coffee now. Right. Now me, I'm going to get coffee. Emily, the deal is that if people that get pain with deep penetration, it can be infection, both the uterus or the tubes. There can be ovarian cyst, endometriosis, these sorts of things. But did they do a pelvic ultrasound when you were checked out?
I've never had an ultrasound. Basically, it feels like my vagina is extremely stretched.
And maybe it's a anatomical problem. Maybe you're small.
Yeah. That happens once in a while.
I suspect it's probably a combination of that and being a little nervous with these things, because that kind of muscular spasm, the sensation of being too tight.
She's calling from Alaska, and it's hard to go jogging those mornings when it's really cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just can't never seem to really warm it up.
Can't
everything
loosen up the
feeling
vagina.
Tight. But yeah, it's
You know what I'm saying?
You're calling. Hold on, Hopsing. This is a very serious problem here. How dare you make light of one of our callers? It's a very serious problem. People from Florida never have any difficulty getting light. You know what I'm saying?
Southern California, yeah.
Yeah, there's the vagina plenty loose.
Yeah.
Well lubricated. Smells of coconut oil.
Oh, God.
As opposed to seal blubber.
Yeah. right. It's just like too many layers of pelt or something, you know? All right. Do they have a lab?
Well, so what is the solve? The thing, it's a combination of...
She needs a pelvic ultrasound, and she needs a understanding partner who really works with this very carefully and kindly, gently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's hear about how one could do... Could you teach someone to do Sean Connery? Can you teach someone to do any of your voices?
I think you can teach them, here's where they're from, here's their dialect, here's where they come from in their throat.
Right.
Here's their speech rhythms. You can coach, sure, put something together, and then it's up to them. It's like I took tennis lessons from this dude once, and he showed me 7 things in 15 minutes, and he goes, now you don't need me no more. You practice these 7 things for the rest of your life. That's what tennis players do. And I think that if you can break things down for people like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the most important popular thing I ever did was Sean Connery on Jeopardy. And it was like this weird thing where I sit in my office and I was watching this movie, The Untouchables, and I wanted to do him. So I was doing lines from that, you know, like, okay, pal, why the Mahashka? You know, Mr. Nash, I am just a poor big cop. Big cop. You know what I mean? Who would claim to be that? Who is not? You know what I mean? That's kind of how I learned that. And then we turned it into a little bit of a cartoon, and suddenly we had Sean Connery like saying, not a fan of the ladies, are you Trebek? You know? Which makes no sense at all, but I mean, that's probably my only niche in Western civilization.
Connery on...
I knew I'd go down for something, but not for anal bum covers for 5,000.
The best... on that is when they put old Burt Reynolds, old 80s, early 80s, late 70s, smoking the bandit, Burt Reynolds. So just chewing his gum and wearing his Trans Am jacket, you know, his members only Trans Am jacket, just cocky and chewing his gum. I don't know. There's something. I don't know, maybe it just becomes surreal at a certain point about doing an impression of a guy who's still alive. Although it's an impression of him 25 years ago.
Yeah, when he was almost a different person.
Well, when he was a different person.
You can make those choices.
You don't see it that often, and it just cracks me up. But of course, Sean Connery on Jeopardy. Now, since Will Ferrell's gone, do we do that one anymore?
No, we don't.
No.
Irreplaceable Will Ferrell.
Good,
very,
yeah.
Very, very, very hard to
learn. He did a Alex Trebek that was his own take on it, too. Totally Trebek.
That's what geniuses do. I mean, it's his own interpretation of everything, and that's why he killed for 5 or 6 years. It was just unreal being out there with him.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he is. He's
fabulous.
He's great. He's a great
comic actor.
Yeah.
And writer.
And a nice guy, I might add.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. I mean,
that's a weird thing.
Oh yeah. No! I read this book once about how like geniuses are supposed to be scumbags or something, or be dissolute, and he's neither. It's a really nice family, and he's quite a gentleman.
Huh. Yeah, and you know the thing about him is he came up slow enough. Not to get a whole ass full of himself too early. Mm-hmm. It's not in him.
It's not in him to ever be that way. And I promise you, I mean, he just won't be. It's not in him.
No, it would have shown its reared its head by now.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked with him too many times to know what happens if you give him a microphone and a pencil and a camera. I know what he can do.
I've never met the man, but let me say this. No, I've met him 3 times. He's always very friendly.
Yeah.
Disarmingly humble as well.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask him to come on the show. He says he doesn't care for you. I promised him you wouldn't be here. He said whatever it takes. Just the stink of a stool would be enough. And I don't mean stool.
You don't mean like I left the stool behind?
No.
What I sit on. Yes.
That's what I mean. And yes. Sheila? Sheila?
Oh, yeah?
You're 17?
Yes, I am.
Did you forget your made-up name?
No, I'm sorry.
All right, so your name is Sheila.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's up, baby doll?
Well, I lost my virginity at 15, mm-hmm. and between the period of 2 years, I've had sex with maybe 5 guys, and I've never seemed to orgasm, even mm-hmm. with masturbating, never.
Yeah, which is very, very common for people under 20, and it's one of the amazing things to men that women would even choose to have sex if
for
they
me,
didn't
it's under
orgasm.
70. I've bumped it up 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, this happens.
All the time. It's routine.
That's common.
Yeah, most women under 20 don't have orgasms.
Let's try
and
to
they
break.
Certainly don't have it during intercourse.
Let's try to do our math thing, and we're always right because we always agree.
Yeah.
Number of women who don't have an orgasm with intercourse under 18.
80%.
80 plus.
Yeah.
80 plus. Yeah, and then oral.
Oral about 10-15%.
Don't.
Don't?
Yeah.
Of that 80%?
Don't break that group off into
total,
a separate group. Yeah.
Total 60%.
Yeah, it was like sort of 50-50. Yeah. This is under 18.
Yeah, under 18.
But masturbating could get a slightly 50, higher 50. Percentage
yeah,
in there.
50.
So here's the whole thing. All bets are off before like 21 for women.
It's literally doesn't come online. This biology is not operating yet.
Right.
But the amazing thing is women are profoundly affected by estrogen at that age, which creates the experience of receptivity. So the idea of sex being a receptive experience and taking somebody in and feeling gratified by that is, in fact, what young women are experiencing, but doesn't always include orgasm.
This is why women have sex without an orgasm and why guys...
can't understand.
No. For me, it'd be like the liver lasagna I tried once when I was stoned. It'd be like, no, that's it for me and the lasagna with the liver in it. That's enough. Tried it. Didn't like it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really frustrating because...
Hopsing's mad because he's a cook. It was his lasagna. He chased me out of the kitchen. I'll never forget that.
Dog liver.
I told you, the Chinese should not be messing with baked Italian dishes, Hop. So, there are other things you do well.
Wow.
What could I say? Sheila?
Yeah.
Hold on. Just like on Bonanza, they had a Chinese cook. Yell at every once in a while. All right.
So, Sheila, relax. That's normal. And maybe slow down on the sex and try to get a relationship going. Kind of work it out with somebody.
Also, yeah, that's right. Finding a guy you're into is going to help a lot.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was with the guy for like a year, and he never, ever, I mean, I cared about him a lot, you know? I mean, it wasn't to the point of, you know, actual, like, relationship type. You know, it was just like a mutual kind of thing. I mean, I cared about him a lot. And
yeah, he didn't reciprocate. He didn't reciprocate. And you need to get in a real relationship. Come on.
And just get in a real relationship.
Please.
Got to be love there, baby doll.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never felt that connection, so I...
Well, then hang on till you do. That's good.
Just hold out.
It's your body trying to protect yourself from having sex too early.
Right.
Too soon.
And by the way, 16, 17-year-old guys trying to get orgasm out of a woman is like a raccoon trying to get a candy bar out of a vending machine. Yes. It's a disaster.
Yes.
It's just
shaking
just
the machine.
Shaking, pawing at it. Yeah. Can see it.
Scratching it, yeah.
It's trying to reach up in there. Eventually it's going to crap itself and just fall asleep. I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, now I know. You know, it's like, they see the vending machine. Go get the duct tape and the coat hanger. Let's go. And a broom handle. Let's go. I'll get that thing out of there. I need a pipe cleaner. I need some duct tape. And we need about half that mop panel. Let's go. Let's get this done. Now, before, though, I was just staring at it through the glass. Oh. Start pawing at it. Start shaking around a little. Start walk around it. Go around the back. Nothing. Yeah, guys, just think about how lame. Think about how lame your average 16-year-old dude is, and then imagine what he's trying to do to get the orgasm loose from the chick. And by the way, he's just doing what he would want done to himself,
right?
Which is sort of harder and faster,
right?
And
which is way off what she needs.
The chick doesn't know enough to even know he's not doing the right thing. Is not secure enough or comfortable enough to sound off and say anything about it. Mm-hmm. About the best you can get out of her is it's burning. Stop. Yeah. It hurts, you know? Yes. Mm. It's not going to happen. Mm. But then again, the 45-year-old guy goes to town on her, and he's a bad guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. That's the world you live in, brother.
that is.
All right. Well, what are you going to do?
It takes all kinds.
I'll tell you what really needs to be done is...
Please.
I hate to say it, but 16-year-old guys need a little lesson in oral sex. One camp. You know they have space camp for 11-year-olds? Oral camp.
Yeah.
Just here's what it is, fellas.
You could also get a lesson in some of the class. Women have a lot of classy, impressive qualities, and maybe at 16 you don't really understand that.
And
not only don't understand it, our culture indoctrinates males into believing that there's no difference.
Yeah.
That it's somehow the same thing, just with long hair. It's hey, you want, that's what she wants.
They want you exactly
the same way as you.
I
could be farther from the truth.
I mean, my life would have been so much. I mean, I can't believe how stupid I was.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still pretty stupid. I didn't realize these are really impressive, finely tuned creatures.
Right. Oh, my God.
What? That's true.
No, you're right. And I'm telling you, 16-year-old, nobody dumber than a 16-year-old male.
It's not dumb. It's lame.
Okay, but
different.
16-year-old males, lamer than 12-year-old males.
Yeah. Well, under the influence of a drug, testosterone.
Yeah.
It's a 12-year-old
12-year-old with
drug.
Sack hair.
Yeah, with sack.
Religious. Sacrifice fly. Whatever it is, they're SAC. Strategic Air Command. That's that AWACS thing.
That's good. Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
SAC is a bad thing.
I really
should give oral camp. I should have oral camp.
You need to think of a catcher name for it. Just think about it. Let's go to calls. But you need something. Oral camp doesn't hit it.
Yeah, but we call it the OC.
Ooh,
uh-huh.
Just the OC will do.
Now, all camp sounding a little better, isn't it? Adam Carolla, I'd like to welcome you to the OC. Hopsy, come on. Get in the kitchen rattling pots and pans.
Vanessa, 21.
Yes, hello.
What's happening?
Hey there.
Okay, I have not really a serious problem, but I need help because my father is... I don't want to say a recovering alcoholic because he never went through a 12-step. but he is making a concerned effort not to drink. Unfortunately, my brother and I are starting to find bottles hidden throughout the house.
Yeah, no, the alcoholism, once it's in a diseased state, is not something that he can stop doing. There's something called white knuckling, where people could try to hang on for a period of time, but the fact is that the brain's biology has been changed by the drug in this genetically prone individual, your dad, and now his motivational systems are completely preoccupied with using drugs and alcohol. Just the way you would be if you hadn't eaten for 3 weeks. That's the same kind of drive.
Because that's what it feels like.
Yeah, it's the same kind of drive. Even more so, it's almost like it has a sexual kind of drive to it. It's, it's like you have to satisfy this thing. And it's everything you think all day long is colored by this. And it's even a part of the brain that demands behavior without even consulting consciousness many times. Mm-hmm. The initiation.
Who's it not consulting?
Consciousness.
Oh, consciousness. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That it just will, just behavior will be instituted. You'll just all of a sudden be drinking. And, you know, there's nothing he can do about it unless he gets treatment. That's the only thing he can do to try to cut down, for
but,
you to try to control
it. That's the whole thing. My brother and I know that, and we want to help him with this, but at the same time, how do we bring it up to him without,
hold on, quiet down. You both live in at the same house he lives in?
Yes, we both came back while we were in school.
Vanessa, what are you talking about? He's an alcoholic. Bring it up. It's his disease. And tell him that you will not have anything to do with his disease. You'll be out of his life, and you'll be happy to support his recovery.
And very simple. You guys both went off to college, and now it's summer break?
I joined the Army, and I'm out and I'm back. And my brother ran away to go live in Breckenridge for a year, and now he's back.
Oh, by the way, hold on. That announcement made more sense. For some reason, we're back for the summer. I thought, these don't sound like college.
No.
Alcoholic.
They're
pop.
Both running away.
Yeah.
Vanessa, think how you're participating in this disease. You're tiptoeing around like you're going to express some truth to him about his disease. Like, we don't want to upset his disease. We might interfere with his drinking. We might upset him that we have to stop. He has to stop his drinking. That's how unwilling you are to actually see to it that he stops drinking.
And by the way, I don't know how the Army works, but do you get to just come back after, like, a year?
I was in for 2 years. I was in Germany, actually.
Oh, really?
For 2 years. Yeah, I missed Iraq by a month. Mm.
Good times. Now it's probably worse where you are, because at least there you'd be, with the gear, as they say.
Yeah.
All right, so you're finding bottles stashed around. What about your mom? I'm sure she's long gone or no help.
She's what?
They got divorced when I was 12, and she basically skipped out, left him with two kids and a mortgage. Bye, figure it out yourself.
All right. Well, the mortgage part all guys get left with, no matter what, even when we're there.
His drinking was really bad, basically uncontrollable, smashed every night, and he would fight with me, and that's how I ended up moving out.
Vanessa,
and I came back.
Here's your mission. You got to not hook up with an alcoholic, abusive guy yourself.
Right.
You have to not pop out any kids to screw up yourself.
No kids at 21 and through the Army, so I'm doing good so far.
Good. And watch out for the guys you're attracted to.
And go to Al-Anon, get a sponsor yourself. If you really want to do something for your dad, that has the highest probability of getting him into treatment.
And it's one of the only things you can do, really.
Yeah, you can actively do. That's right. Because you won't dance with him anymore. You won't be in the dance with the alcoholic if you have the support and the connected relationships you need outside of the house with people recovering from codependency. You won't engage in this dance, and it will freak him out.
I was thinking
that may get his attention.
I was thinking about him hiding the bottles, and I was thinking that you know how I always say souffle humor is on the way of the dodo?
Yeah.
Daryl, there used to be, in sitcoms, there used to be souffle humor.
It was conventional humor in the 70s.
I'm cooking a souffle, I come walking in act one and slam the front door, the wife comes running in, I got the souffles in the oven. Be very quiet. Mm-hmm. And somewhere at the end, the souffle falls, and that's the what I call the souffle humor. It's gone from sitcoms today. You know what else is gone? Hiding humor. The one where the alcoholic is getting the bottle from up over the light fixture, and come on, where is? Hands him the flask. There's more, and they just keep keep pulling stuff out. They used to do it with weapons too. They'd go like when Starsky's captain would say, "Drop your piece." He put it down. He would go, "Get the one out of the boot." He'd have to go down, reach. You keep doing it. It was hot.
Where's all this gone?
I don't know. It's gone the way the dodo.
Right.
I don't know what Hop Singh would have to say about it. I'm sure he wouldn't be pleased.
The coconut, hitting the amnesia humor, and hit with the coconut.
Yeah, stupid.
That's why. That's right.
He's not happy about it. Yeah, stupid. He is happy they stopped calling David Carradine Chinaman, though, by the way, from the 70s. Remember that, Drew?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very popular show. We're going to take ourselves a little break. Daryl Hammond is here tonight. He'll be Tempe this weekend. That
Tempe.
Is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Tempe.
So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Daryl Hammond is our guest tonight.
Yeah. Hello, hello.
Funny member of Saturday Night Live. I'm going to be doing a little comedy tour this summer, and it's going to start by being in Tempe, Arizona this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Let me just...
Wait, Daryl's trying to say something.
Oh, sorry.
No. I said yes, sir.
All right. Quiet, Daryl. I'll tell you when Daryl's got something to say. Sasha.
Yes?
You're 18?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to Sasha because she's been on hold for 100 minutes. I got to get rid of her.
Okay.
All right. Sasha.
Hello.
It says here, although it's an interesting proposition, you're secretly in love with a girl who died...
Yeah.
This is a friend of yours?
Yeah, we met in school and we're like pretty much inseparable for a while.
This was a best friend of yours?
Yeah.
How'd she die?
In a car accident.
And how long ago was this?
It was in October. Mm-hmm.
Was it a romantic relationship?
No, I never told her, you know, that... I, you know, loved her or anything.
You had a crush on her while she was alive.
Yeah, and I never told her, but, you know, she always knew that she was, like, a really special friend.
Yeah.
And she let me know that I was special for her, too.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem when these kinds of tragedies happen is not only is, you know, somebody dead from a car crash, but whatever feelings you have, they just get amplified.
Yeah.
They become sort of glorified. Eventually they become sort of bigger than they would have been.
But also lesbian relationships. If you're a lesbian, right, Sasha?
No, actually, I'm not. That's the problem.
That's a problem.
Like, my boyfriend now, who I'm really, you know, I really have deep feelings for him, but he feels like he's competing with a dead girl.
Yeah, better than live competition, I can tell you that right now.
Well, the deal is...
That's my thing.
It's good.
Like, my feelings, like, with dead, I don't care. You name the sport, softball, I'll take them. You know what I mean?
Dead player, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Ted Williams, a great, great ball player, but I could take him. I could take him now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in his day,
yeah.
You know, no competition, obviously. But now that he's dead, I'd probably take him. Yeah.
Probably.
He still probably feels a little better than I do, but I think I'd take him hitting.
But Sasha, the fact that you don't want to open up and have intimate relations right now is understandable. You're still sort of reeling from this loss.
But it also smacks of something else that's up.
It does smack of something else.
And so does the sort of the bisexuality. And I know people get confused about that when they listen. But
of this may just be screwed up 17-year-old stuff.
And there's that, too. Yeah. I mean, look, and this is definitely a loss. There's no doubt about it. And I don't know what to say about it other than you got to move forward.
And she hasn't, and it's been more than 6 months.
Which means she was depressed or is depressed.
It means getting depressed. And so it's worth having an evaluation, Sasha, to talk to somebody who's used to dealing with adolescent issues and get this properly checked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a couple of good friends die when I was 18, and...
Adolescents are actually profoundly affected they're usually profoundly affected by peers that die, those that actually have feelings. Because adolescents don't think of themselves as mortal, they don't think of themselves as biological, and they're sort of not supposed to die. And so when they do, it's very shattering to them. So
yeah, and probably confusing.
Confusing, yeah.
Laura?
Yes.
You're 23?
Mm-hmm. You can call me Anna, though. I listened to you guys for years.
All right.
One of my questions is...
I'll tell you what. We're going to call you what's on the screen.
Okay.
Laura.
That's fine.
Because that'll screw me up.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Laura.
My question is I've been married for 5 years. I have a 2-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And me and my husband, we fight a lot. And I went, for some reason, I got involved with another person on the side mm-hmm. for a couple months. And they broke up with me, and I went running back to my husband. But my question mm-hmm. is maybe I'm finding myself having depression problems. I'm not sure if maybe I'm having a lot of problems with my relationship, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, maybe you're having and you don't know?
Let's put a check by that box.
Yeah, you've said
trouble with the relationship.
Yeah, you said it's a horrible problem. You've been having affairs. You've run away. What do you mean? What are you asking?
He's asking, how do you know if you feel like you're with the right person? If you feel like that you're trapped or...
I ask myself every time that same question every time I come into the studio.
Yeah, I want it myself.
Yeah. Laura, Okay, let's explore this for a second, because I think people get into that, is this my soulmate, is this the right person? They get into that a little too much
it's
in this society.
Yeah, it's BS.
Whoever you're with could be the right person, could be the wrong person, depending on what you and the person make of it.
Right. You have to be willing to try to establish a real relationship.
And so do they.
Yeah. The two of you need to be willing to do that. And if he's not willing to work on this, and if he is stuck in this sort of acrimonious, painful, hostile relationship and doesn't want to let go of that, wants to try to make something peaceable and workable for you, that's not going to work.
But we should also find out, like, usually women who cheat or do what you did. And also, it says here the guy's 37.
So that means he was 32 and you were 18 when you got involved with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've been married for 5 years, right?
Yes.
Do you have a certain nationality, or
translucent.
Translucent white trash.
American.
Okay, because let me just talk about you behind your back for a second. I don't want to sound cruel, but once in a while, sometimes if you're super ultra, like purebred white trash, it could actually start sounding like you're from an Eastern Bloc country or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. I was getting like almost a little bit of an accent. It's not. Laura?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what went so wrong in your family of origin that you got hooked up with this 30—you got married at 18 and he was 32. God knows how old you were when you hooked up with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
What were you running away from at home?
My mother. I was having a lot of problems with my mother.
Yeah. Where was your dad? Not around?
No, my dad was like a really bad loser. Sexual mm-hmm. abused me.
Fantastic. All right.
There we go.
All right, that's trouble. And now we really don't trust this guy.
Yeah.
And you were, how old were you, by the way, when you hooked up with this guy? We can't
about
hear her answer.
16 or 17.
All right, 16 or 17?
Mm-hmm.
15 or 14.
We'll always go down on that one.
Yeah.
It's sort of like weight.
Yeah.
Except for weight, you go the other direction.
Yeah.
Age, we go this way. Weight, we go up.
That's okay. Put her at 14,
and
him at
now
28.
You have one child with him?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple things. Just damage control stuff. No more goddamn kids. Because you're not in any shape, and neither is he.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, you got to get yourself some help. Otherwise, you're going to screw this kid up worse than you got screwed up.
At least get yourself some help. Whether or not he wants to participate in it or not, at least you can take yourself and get some help.
Like marriage counseling? Because I think maybe I have like a depression problem. I think that's why
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do with the sexual abuse and all that stuff. You're going to be very prone to that. But you also probably have what's called a personality disorder, which is the result of having been traumatized as a kid. And that's something that needs to be dealt with
professionally. Well, how do you know that? What's a personality disorder?
Well, in her case, it's a chronic lifestyle of dysfunctional, chaotic relationships. That's a sign of it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Add Derek to that list. And Hop sing. Oh, no, I think we really struck a nerve with Hop.
Oh, is that Kai?
He's clearly uncomfortable with this line of questioning. Right. He must have heard you through that kitchen door.
All right, so that's how you know you have a personality disorder. Well, you have a chaotic relationship.
That's not exclusive, but trauma history, chaotic relationships, unstable, difficulty maintaining jobs, unstable mood states, intense relationships. All that stuff is part of trauma survivorship,
Laura,
and PTSD, borderline personality disorder.
Okay, here's all you really need to understand from this conversation, which is, if you were sexually abused by your father, you have to get some counseling.
Right.
All right?
And depression would be expected.
I've had counseling. I had therapy when I was really young.
Well,
yeah, but that's just making crap out of clay.
Yeah, that was band-aid.
You got to get into it a little bit now.
Yeah. And it could last for a long time.
Yeah, it should.
It should last for a long time.
Oh, I would tell you, I would love to be a counselor. That's what I want to do ultimately.
What?
I want to counsel like 5-year-olds. well, you were molested? Here's some clay. I'm going to be smoking. I'll come back. I'll come back, what, about 45, 50 minutes is what you made there. That's okay. That's daddy punching mommy. All right, great. That's $90. We'll see you next week, all right? Bring some clay, though, because mine dried up. Bring clay. All right, I'm going to smoke another butt. You going to work on some clay some more? Who's coming in? I got to buy more of those mini chairs. I got to buy the small chairs. Yeah, there you go. Yep. Child counsel. Okay. And what's that drawing? What is that? That's daddy stabbing mommy. Okay. That's $90. We're going to try to we'll get some more clay. And can you pick me up a pack of smokes if you're going out? And the mini beanbag, too. Not just a mini chair, but a small beanbag. I'll get some colorful carpeting. It'll be great. Yeah, that's it. I'll get some nonsense indoor-outdoor carpet. You work with clay. I'll sit here like a genius. By the way, may write a children's book, too. This is going to be great. That 2 words on every page. I'll get someone else to illustrate. It'll be huge.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Darryl.
Well done.
Yeah, I really like to just work with like people that were sort of, I like to work with kids that are sort of pre-speech. That was my job. Yeah? Okay. True, that's all they do. You work with clients.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's,
you do.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know
sure.
I'm right.
Yeah.
You're right. But children's books. I'm right about that one, right? Yeah. You don't have to do anything to write a children's
book.
Right. That's yeah. True. By the way, the greatest children's novelist there, I don't know if you call himself a novelist, but the greatest children's book writer of all time is Dr. Seuss. And break his work down. Really, take a good look at Green Eggs and Ham. Take a good
hard
look at it.
What do you see when you look at that?
I see something I could have crapped out in about 15, 20 minutes. I couldn't have drawn it. I'll tell you that. But in a train? Yeah. No. How about in a plane? No. How about in a box? No. How about with a fox? Really? This is genius, everybody. Amazing. No one else could have done this. All right. I'm bitter because I didn't think of it.
Me.
I didn't think of it.
I always thought a lot of that book.
Yeah, something called Hop on Pop.
I mean, a guy named Sam I Am.
Sam I Am, Hop on Pop. And by the way, didn't this guy have a wife?
Who's Sam I Am?
No, Dr. Seuss. It was like, I got an idea for a book. It's called Hop on Pop. Yeah, why don't you get on those leaves? Get out in the yard. Get busy. Yeah, Sam I Am. How about Sam I Am and make with the garbage cans, would you? Hop on
Lincoln,
Pop.
I heard Lincoln's wife was all over him all the time.
Really?
She was nuts. Yeah, like,
you're always emancipating. Enough with the emancipation.
Like, her son had her put away.
Really? Oh, yeah, that's right.
The rights of man, the rights of man. That's all I hear from you is the rights of man. Get at, you know.
I really.
I want to go to.
You're going to be president.
I want to go to a taffy pull, and you want to emancipate.
They always do that. They always say, like, you know, behind every great man is a great one. But what about all the naysaying wives historically been talking about?
I mean, I heard
riding Lincoln.
I read she was hell on him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
what about that, Drew?
God.
Your wife yelling at you all the time. Oh, you want to write a book? She's mad.
No, it's not good. It's good.
Yeah. You're just saying that because she may be listening.
Good.
My wife is all the time like, ah, you cack, you know, will you shut up already? I can't concentrate.
Well, the things that you say that just don't make any sense, like, you know, I'm tired. You're always tired. That's because I'm always working. You're always working. I mean, you know, sometimes they seem ludicrous, but I mean, when you have a kid, it gets complicated, doesn't it, doctor?
Yeah, three kids.
Does your wife yell at you to stop doing impressions ever, though?
I don't even do them in our house.
That you're so beaten down.
No.
That's so broken.
No.
So broken at home, Drew. I'm scared to talk around my house. My wife just says, okay, would you quiet? Just watch
The Sopranos. Big casino. Big casino.
You big cashada. Quiet. And then so I shut up for 10 seconds, and she's like, Stugatz, you don't talk.
What is it about your life, Adam, that everywhere you go and everything you do, you want to talk, people tell you to shut up?
Yeah, but
that's the life you've created for yourself.
But when I shut up for 10 minutes, everyone starts yelling at me.
That you're Stugatz.
Stugatz. Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like I need some sort of in-between mode. Everyone will be happy. Like I say a word like every 1 point, every like 2.8 seconds. Just one word, like
Just don't shut up. Shut up for 3 minutes to 5 minutes.
Right. Work it in with moderation.
I'm going to do that right now, actually, for exactly 4 minutes. Daryl Hammond in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Daryl Hammond is in studio tonight. Going to be in... The show becomes so cathartic for Daryl. I don't think he could take it. If this show were 3 hours, Daryl would kill himself. There's no doubt about
either
it.
Either that or ascend to some sort.
No, you're sitting there. You're cracking jokes. Then someone calls up. They're getting hit. There's serious.
It's not funny.
Well.
No, I know. It's my job.
When the doctors match, the two doctors that are roaming around here, you know.
No, but I'm just saying, you make fun of these, you do impressions and stuff, and then once in a while you have to meet Clinton.
Yeah.
And it's weird, but you have to it's just my job. You give them that, it's my job.
Yeah.
That's what I'm giving you right now.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
And what I'm saying is I'm just being human. When someone calls up about getting beat up, you know, I don't typically listen to
that. It's not funny.
Hear from people like that.
No. And,
that's most of our callers, though.
My job. But here's
and it's interesting, and I'm listening.
Yeah. No, we're fans. No doubt. He's starting to look like Clinton, by the way.
Oh, great.
Cross Army bit his lip. He did that Clinton lip.
Okay.
Love the thumbs up.
I want to hear what Clinton says in his book about his sexual addiction. That's going to be interesting.
I'm curious.
What do you think he will say?
No idea. He's going to have to say something that will disappoint.
Why are you saying that? He can't give the whole...
Because he is really... I've known about since he walked into the White House that the two of their relationship is so sick.
Hillary and Bill.
And his alcoholism addictions are profound. And he's been hiding
it. Did you say alcohol?
Mm.
Yeah.
He's got
a pretty good gin blossom going.
If you see cartoons of him, just
big put it red
next,
nose.
Yeah, put it next to
WDC Fields.
Right.
Nose looks redder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's got his mom was a morphine addict. He was a severe trauma survivor.
What was his trauma?
The stepdads beat the crap out of him.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, and he had to break up with them beating the mom up, and he has all these stories about this. And they tell him, "Oh, now this is a big deal."
Think about the definition. And Drew, give me the definition of addiction, by the way.
Ongoing use in the face of consequence.
Right. Now, in the face of consequence, you're basically the leader of the free world, and you're going to risk it all with a fat intern, in the Oval Office. That's addiction.
Right.
That's the essence of addiction.
Yeah.
Who cares? Mm-hmm. I'm cautious. I don't care. I don't care if it's a million to one. I'm rolling the dice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they need to do that. That's part of the deal.
Think about the risk he is willing to, the guy's a goddamn president of the United States. He's willing to carry on. That's addiction.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You better hope it's addiction, by the way, or it's the world's dumbest man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's either a retard or he's addicted.
Well, it's like if you're a baseball player, let's say, like I was, and you keep drinking even though you can't play anymore, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's alcoholism. Yeah, addiction.
All right. Let's hop to the phones here. So the point is, he's going to come out. Hold on. He's going to come out with a tell-all book, except for when you're done with it, it's going to feel like you just ate a big handful of cotton candy.
Right.
Looks like something, feels like something is nothing. Mm. You just belch up air.
We'll see.
Yeah?
I'm anxious to see how it's portrayed.
Well, the guy's a sociopath.
No, I don't know if he's a sociopath.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Because I've seen him in person, and I'm telling you, this is a gifted... I mean, I would know if the guy... This guy cares when he talks to you. I mean, if he's acting or he's not acting, you can't tell. I mean, this guy works the room, and he loves it, and he's gifted.
There's no doubt.
And a great administrator. Huh?
And a great administrator and a brilliant man.
Yes.
Can't take that away from him.
So he's great at the job.
Yeah. But let's talk about who he really is. Why can't we be honest about that? It's important.
Yeah, but the guy that he produces.
No doubt he's effective. Look, most...
But he wasn't as effective as he could have been. His addiction almost took him out. That's the point.
I see.
Yeah. And, yeah, I've spent a little, maybe a little too much time on him getting the BJ and a little less time on Al-Qaeda during his reign. I don't know whose fault that was. But yeah. the point is, no doubt he was effective. And then no doubt that, look back on it. Think about the timeline. Think about the money and the time spent. Meanwhile, the Al-Qaeda guys are making training videos, and we're ignoring them. But anyway, the point is... Is I don't know if Clinton has a response to that. Does Clinton have a response?
There's nothing wrong with getting a BJ that cannot be fixed, but what is right with getting a BJ? No, but I mean,
I'm oversimplifying.
Are you mischaracterizing that whole era? I don't know.
I am.
I'm amazed that here we are looking back at the Reagan era with glowing idealized renditions of what happened. I remember that as being extremely cantankerous.
Here's the thing. We do it in a negative way. We do it in a positive way. Here's the thing about Clinton. Never met the man, obviously. I think he has a personality disorder and not necessarily in a way that's going to make him a bad friend. I think he'd be a great friend. I think he'd be a great guy to hang with. Yeah. He might even be a great guy to run the country.
Yep.
He might be great at many things. Guys are screwed up. Women are screwed up. Always more effective for a period of time than anyone. The greatest performers are the most screwed up people. Probably the greatest leaders and dictators and whatever. Always the best. Pilots, astronauts, everything. But he manipulates, and you never feel like I'm getting everything. I'm like most politicians from him. I'll be surprised if you're impressed by his book, Drew.
Yeah.
We'll find out because you're camping out at the Barnes & Noble.
I may have to.
And listen, if you want to know where you can get
my book,
get it the same place you get Drew's
That's
book.
That's right.
Coming out in pulp, right?
Papyrus.
Going from paperback to pulp coming this summer. All right, Daryl Hammond. Thanks, you, Drew. We didn't take another call. Daryl Hammond is here tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Well, that's a show, everybody. It was a fast show. It was a slow show.
A fast show.
Fell fast.
Yeah.
I got a little jet lag, so I'm spinning around just a little bit. Daryl Hammond, by the way.
Yes. Dear friend.
Dear friend. Big fan. Thanks for coming on the show. Always an interesting time.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't call in sometimes to say hi.
That'd be great.
All right, so I'll get the number.
Yeah, okay. We'll give you that.
All right.
Do we have that number?
Do we have phones here?
Yeah. You call in. All right. Daryl Hammond going to be in Tempe,
yes,
Arizona.
Yes.
This, not a big college.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I don't know. I think so.
Oh, okay.
I know Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
A long weekend that will seem short if you see Daryl, because time flies. We'll take a little extendo break. Jenny McCarthy coming in Wednesday. Thursday, Alanis Morissette. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
There's nothing wrong with getting a BJ that cannot be fixed, but what is right with getting a BJ?
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Ingold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.